There's a lot of information the mainstream press doesn't report because it doesn't fit a lot of times with their views of what reality should be. One of those areas where the mainstream is not reporting is about how many Christians are leaving Muslim areas around the world. I'm Tom Baker. You're listening to Law and Gospel on this day. And with us for Ruminations Thursday is our good friend, the Reverend Pastor Wesley Reimnitz. Hi, Wes.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Yourself?
Trying to stay dry. It's been raining up here all day long.
Yes, I don't think that that bridge got flooded out again, though, did it?
Oh, no, no, no.
Well, that's good.
The flood's coming up again. The waters are coming up again, but not, I don't think, as bad as it was before.
Well, until you sent me this note about the mass exodus of Christians from the Muslim world, I really wasn't that aware of it, so I did a little research in preparation for today, and what I found is that Bethlehem, that not that long ago was almost 100% Christian, is only 10 to 12% Christian now, and there is a Baptist church there in Bethlehem where two of their women were killed because they invited children to their vacation Bible school.
I am so appreciative that, you know, when I sent you that email and showed you about that persecution, that you picked up on it. I've been following it since 9/11, when the two airplanes went into the Trade Center.
Right.
And it's been going on. The article I sent you was in 2003, Iraq had 1 million Christians. Today, they have less than 400,000 10 years later. Persecution's just way up in all of these countries.
Well, in fact, in a 2010 Baghdad church attack, 60 Christian worshipers were killed. And the article says that's just the tip of a decade-long iceberg.
It's just getting to be a serious problem. Yeah, it isn't just only in Baghdad. The article also brought out in Bosnia, which is in southern Europe, had at one time over 900,000 Catholics, and now today, about a dozen years later, they're down to 400,000 or 440,000 Catholics.
Well, for example, this gets really political. For example, the U.S. supports a jihad on Syria's secular president, Assad. But what they're showing here is that the same pattern now is coming to Syria, where entire regions and towns where Christians lived for centuries before Islam came into being have now been emptied as the opposition targets Christians, and they kidnap them, plunder them, behead them, all in compliance with mosque calls telling the populace that it is a sacred duty to drive Christians away.
Yeah, and if you remember a couple of weeks ago, I brought to you those sayings from the Quran that said that Christians, in essence, are infidels worthy of death. And
yes,
they're taking it to heart.
And there was another article that had done a survey among mosques and Muslims throughout the world, and there was just no doubt that the ones in the United States are much more moderate and tolerant of other religions. But up to 60% in some countries saw no problem with killing your daughter if she disobeyed her father, and a bunch of things in regard to Sharia law. So what's going to happen here?
I think it's time for us as Christians, really in a sense, to wake up, not to go out and persecute Muslims, but to be aware of this. I'm glad that you asked that question. You remember that book by Charles Porterfield Cross?
Yes.
You know, The Conservative Reformation and Its Theology? On page 195 and 196, he talks about that era progresses in threes. It starts with toleration, which says, "You need not be afraid of us. We're few and we're weak. Let us alone. We will not disturb the faith of others." Then it moves on in the second stage, which is equal rights. Truth and error are two balancing forces. And finally, into the third stage of supremacy, error claims preference to its judgment, repudiates the truth, and makes others skillful in combating the truth. And that's precisely what we're seeing in the Muslim world. For instance, in North Africa, that was once very solidly Christian, and out of there came St. Augustine of Hippo, the famous theologian. Today, there's less than 1% Christians in there. It's all Muslim, and they persecute them. They destroy them. Their claim to supremacy of truth, forgetting anybody else.
You know, we're just not aware of what's happening around the world to Christians. For example, in Nigeria, they had prayers on Tuesday, April the 2nd, after the Easter season, because violence left as many as 80 people dead and displaced 4,500 others. And at least 19 people were killed since Easter Sunday when gunmen believed to be nomadic Muslim cattle herders attacked the mostly Christian Atakar group in Kaura district, which was a remote area of the Kaduna state. Now, why, if this happened in the United States, can you imagine a Christian community or any kind of religious community being attacked? It would be front page news, but when it happens to Christians around the world, our press seems to just kind of ignore it, except for Fox News is about the only one. They actually did interviews with people in Bethlehem about what they were going through.
Yes. In fact, in Bethlehem, when you bring that up, back when there was fighting going on, Christians were being used as human shields.
Oh, yes. Well, right, right.
I mean, it's just tragic. It is one of these underreported. The writer of that article I sent you was Raymond Ibrahim, and he's just written a book out there now called Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians. And he goes even into greater detail than some of the things that we're talking about. And he's talking about that it really comes down to the Quran, Islamic theology, the Sharia law, the Islamic culture. This is not about economics. It's not about politics. It's not about ethnicity. This is about religious violence.
Yes, one of the areas you mentioned was Africa. In Mali, which is West Africa, a Christian leader was killed by being beheaded, and Islamic militants really were having the freedom of the area. Remember that town called Timbuktu? Well, right. Christians have fled the town of Timbuktu in the north of the country because harsh Sharia law has already been imposed. And churches in Gao, 200 miles to the east of that, have been completely destroyed. In fact, one of those affected is the British Bible College, and one of the graduates, Timothy Yatara, recently returned home to his home country in a bid to help spread the gospel in this remote and dangerous part of Africa located on the edge of the Sahara. So we've got a number of Palestinians who have become Christian, and their life is even in more danger because they're thought to have, of course, betrayed Allah.
Yeah, and you're right, and it's one of the things we need to keep in our prayers, but it's also one of the things that we as Christians need to perhaps be writing our legislature, our House of Reps, our senators, things like this, and bring attention that, you know, if we're going to talk human rights out there in the world, we need to be talking about religious freedom, especially for those of our Christian brothers and sisters in Christ.
Well, remember last time you were on, you had brought information about the military was going to get rid of soldiers if they continued to witness their faith. Fortunately,
right.
That was reversed in a couple of days, and the Pentagon came out with, you know, saying, no, that's not going to happen. But for a while, the individual who was pushing that was under the delusion that that is exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, and there was a famous TV columnist who came out and just called it that just secular ideology was what all they were pushing.
Was that Krauthammer?
No, I thought that was O'Reilly.
Oh, okay. All right, one of them, yeah. Yeah, it's a problem, and the fact of the matter is many people here, in the United States are unaware of this.
Yes. And this Ibrahim that I was talking about in his book, Crucified Again, Exposing Islam's New War on Christians, he points out it's a system of numbers. You go to Saudi Arabia, you don't see persecution of Christians. They took care of it by just outlawing it. It's automatic. There's little or zero Christians in Saudi Arabia. But if you go to the more moderate ones where we're seeing all this going on, you're seeing the flux change. You brought up the United States. We wouldn't tolerate it. Well, less than 1% of the American population is Muslim. But if you go to France, a Western European nation, they have the largest population of Islamic people. And it's a real problem of church bombing, persecution, Christians being killed, and it seems to get little or no attention over there.
And I can understand why a moderate Muslim would be really afraid of these conservative Muslims. I should say not conservative, liberal Muslims, who are taking the Quran in a way that they're using it, shall we say, literalistically, and doing things that are contrary to what many Muslims do believe. And that's what happens when you get with liberalism, who won't take the text as it should be, and takes the extremist parts of the text and puts them into practice.
I would agree, you know, because love does not operate in that fashion.
You see, we're going to be faced with that. For example, I'm still waiting to hear. I've got some good friends who are in the military. One of them I've interviewed a number of times, James Norton. He was a chaplain there. And he's now just retired, but I'm going to try and talk to him about just what is happening now in the armed forces now that homosexual behavior is considered to be okay. What happens to a chaplain who has a sermon showing that homosexuality is as much a sin as adultery? Have you heard anything about that yet?
No, I hadn't. But as I told you, you know, what I would, as a Christian soldier, would say when they tell you, you know, obey your commander.
Yeah.
And not demonstrate your faith or witness your faith. You know,
right.
When he orders you to go to the front lines, you'd have to tell him no. You know why?
Because that would be following your faith rather than the law.
Yeah, Romans 13:1.
Yeah.
We should be what?
Obedient to the governing authorities.
Governing authorities. And wouldn't that be professing our faith?
Exactly. I did some of that also, saying that in sermons I would have to say that I hate Jews, I hate homosexuals, and all this kind of thing. And people would say, well, that's terrible you're saying that. And I say, well, if I tell what my faith says, then I could be removed from the military because I love Jews, I love Muslims, and but I'm not allowed to say that anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
And the reason we love them is, you know, Christ died for them as he died for us. He gave to us that wonderful forgiveness.
Well, even more so, Christ loves me.
That's right.
So how can I withhold love to others? But at the same time, it doesn't mean you have to be your friend. I had given an example of World War II nurses often had to treat Nazi soldiers, and they did that with the best care that they would treat an American soldier. And particularly Christian nurses did it out of love. But they were not friends with these Nazi soldiers. You know what I mean?
Yes, very well. We're very well pointed.
Yes, and so I think we need to start making it clear to those who are bragging about abortion, homosexuality, gay marriage, that this is an abomination before Almighty God, and therefore I don't see how I could be a friend with someone like that. I would not invite them to parties at my house. I want to go out to eat with them. Somehow we have to mark and avoid those who would be around my kids and abusing them by telling them that these things are okay.
That's right.
What's that verse about being thrown in the lake? Why should somebody be thrown in the lake, Jesus says?
Well, That's coming out of Matthew 25. Are you talking about the eternal lake of fire?
No, I'm talking about the reason somebody should be thrown in the lake, according to Jesus.
Oh, it'd be better that a millstone be put around your neck than to let one of these little ones fall away.
No, then let one of these little ones be offended.
Offended, yes.
And the word offend there means telling them a lie.
Yeah.
And so every abortionist and every homosexual by nature offends little ones, because if they're asked by a child, is it okay to do those things, those who practice that abomination will say yes to them. And that's the worst offense you can do for a little child. That's child manipulation, it's child abuse, and from God's point of view, that's where that verse comes in about being drowned in the deepest sea.
Yep. But you know, back to this, one of the things we got to do, you know, back to what Charles Porterfield Cross said, toleration equal right supremacy. You know, one of the things we can do here in the United States is to reach across the road, reach across the street, and begin to love our neighbor and find ways to share that good news with Muslims, whatever religion, whatever place they are, and sharing the good news of Jesus.
Yeah, one of the advantages of having a store that I have in Overland is we have a fairly large Muslim population, so I get to speak with them quite a few times. We also have a grocery store that it's got an Irish name, but obviously this Muslim family had purchased it. And I kind of make a point of dropping in there every now and then, even though the prices they have for, you know, bread and things like that are more expensive, just to see if, you know, we can kind of make a relationship with them and just see where they're coming from. Because I'd hate to be a Muslim right now in the United States. Just like, remember what happened during World War II with Japanese folks?
Yes, they incarcerated them.
They interned them, absolutely. And that was horrible. You know, by the way, I'm pretty ignorant of this. You might know better. Did they do that with Germans too?
Yeah, right. You know they didn't do that.
Well, I'm not sure. I can't imagine why.
Yeah.
Because Germans would have been, you know. Now, I know there was persecution in some Lutheran churches of the Missouri Synod, because at that time, of course, we were still speaking German quite a bit.
Well, yes. In fact, there was persecution there in some of the churches I've talked to. They've had swastikas and all kinds of nasty graffiti put on their doors during World War II. And these were all churches that were sending their sons off into war, World War II, to serve faithfully.
I really believe that, particularly the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and the two other large denominations that stand with us on morality, the Southern Baptist, and I'm talking about large denominations, and the Roman Catholic, we're going to have a real opportunity to speak the clear word of God. And I believe that we can turn things around, like we're doing in the area of abortion. More and more people are coming to the recognition now, especially after the Gusnall trial or whatever his name was, that this is a baby in the womb. This is not something. And I believe one of the Dakotas just passed a law that you cannot have an abortion if the child is over 6 weeks old.
Wow, that's great.
Well, that's wonderful.
And you know, we've got a very good president, Matt Harrison, and he's not afraid to speak out on these issues and bring the truth to light.
Yes, in fact, in case any of you want to hear our president, you just go to youtube.com and then type his name, Matthew Harrison, and he's got a number of videos that you can actually hear him speak. For example, he was at the House in Washington speaking to the legislators on some subjects and such. But anything on pro-life is just really excellent. Our phone numbers here are 505-7850 or toll-free 1-800-730-2727. Maybe we need to go to the phones. Let's go talk to Herman. Hi, Herman.
Yes, thank you. thank you for taking my call. Your comment about the internment of Germans during World War II, there were select internments of probably 5,000 to 10,000, principally held in internment camps in Texas, and their close association to the Nazi movement, the German-American Bund Association, German nationals who were in the country when war was declared, that became the principal group, although it had been looked at by Roosevelt, the president, to intern all the German-Americans in the U.S., potentially, when war started. However, they couldn't have fought the war and kept the factories and farms and filled out the service if they did that.
No.
There were some Italian internments, too, I think a smaller number, but for principal, the same reasons. They were Italian nationals who were extremely sympathetic to Mussolini and in the country when war was declared. The Japanese, also, when they took Manila and other places, interned American and other Allied civilians in camps, too, throughout Southeast Asia. So there was quite a widespread use of internment in addition to the Japanese Americans that you're talking about.
Well, I really appreciate that insights, because that's something I didn't know. You didn't know that either, did you, Wes? Or?
No, I didn't. I did know that they had a German prisoner of war camp in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And they had brought
those,
any
those
Germans
were
brought there. I didn't know about the internment, though.
Yes, they had Italian, Japanese, and German prisoners of war camps in this country, but these other categories were distinct from them.
Well, right? I sure appreciate that information, Herman. Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Boy, we've got the most informed listeners, and that's because they keep listening to KFUO, and that's the goal that we have here. We usually don't get into too much of the politics, but facts like that are fine. Well, we're talking about now, and you have some closing words on this, Wes, about how do we as Christians, therefore, reach out, as you said, across the street to Muslims who may be somewhat timid right now and fearful in light of the persecution around the world by Muslims, the Boston situation, and so forth. Any advice for our listeners?
I think, first of all, you said it well when you said I go and I start trying to make contact with them and get to know me. I think the other thing, with some of the books I've read on ex-Muslims that have become Christians, is as you go and make those friendships, you let them know that there is a loving God. He's not this hateful, vengeful God that you read about in the Quran or that they're told in their mosque and that. Is quite the difference that it's a loving God who reaches out and who forgives and cares for them.
Yeah, I hadn't really realized that Allah has no sure promises for salvation.
Absolutely.
And everybody is in doubt about the closest you can get to it. If you kill an infidel, then you're supposed to have all these women in the nirvana you're going to or whatever.
It has to be in a jihad, a holy war.
Yes, yes, and that's about the closest you get to some kind of a promise, but even there. And the fact that they have to pray five times a day kind of shows the difference between that religion and Christianity that says the prayer, singular, of a righteous person availeth much.
Much, yeah.
And so we don't have a need among Christians to have to say a lot of prayers. I was in a Bible study recently, and now, the church was going through a kind of tough time in a certain area, and one of the ladies says, yeah, I don't know why things didn't work out because I prayed really hard. And I kind of smiled at that, and my point was, you know, it's not your praying hard that makes it more effective. It's that you pray through Jesus, which she was, which means whatever decision is made is always for the best, even though we may not agree with it.
Exactly. Very well said.
So we have a really different view theologically than every other religion in the world who thinks the main problem they have is their God, and they're trying to appease him, they're trying to placate him, and they're trying to do it through all kinds of ways. And here comes Christianity that says that God is already reconciled with you, not because of anything you've done, but because of the work of Jesus Christ on the cross.
Exactly. Very good.
And doesn't your congregation get excited when you do those long gospel things?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. As one said, I said to him in Bible class one time, I go, why is it that this congregation is so willing to confess their sins at the beginning of the service? Lady in back raises her hand because I know what's coming next. I'm going to be forgiven through Jesus Christ.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that the book of Jonah, you know what his confession was at the end of the book? Depart from me, I am a poor, sinful being.
Being, yep.
And once you have that confession, then Jesus really looks good. Having an ascension service tonight?
No, it's kind of fallen by the wayside. I'm waiting for when I retire to help the next guy get it started up again, resurrected.
But you'll talk about it Sunday?
I did it last Sunday.
Oh, last Sunday you already did. Okay. And what are services for your church?
We're doing on Saturday at 6 p.m., Sunday at 7:45 and 10:15 with Bible class at 9.
God bless
them.
Listen to Law and Gospel on KFUO Radio. You can write Pastor Tom at KFUO Radio, 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. Or email lawgospel@lawgospel.com. Law and Gospel is archived for your listening convenience at KFUO.org.